brought to you by Tamron USA and Skip Cohen University. We bring on photographic artists as our creative chefs and discuss their amazing photographs as our favorite visually delicious and tasty dishes. The Tamron Kitchen is full of the greatest imaging cuisines and recipes in the industry, and we're looking forward to sharing those with you today. And now, more than ever, with 2020, it is so important that we all stay inspired as creatives and moving forward. So let's get to today's very special dish. I'm Shamira Young, and I'm joined by my co-chef and co-host, Skip Cohen. Skip, what's up?
Hey, actually, I can honestly say nothing, which is what every single person just about in the country can say these days because of the pandemic. So you say to somebody, what's new? And they go, nothing. But I have to tell you, there's a lot of inspiration out there.
Yes.
And this is going to be a lot of fun today. Our guest today is very much a specialist, more or less, in lifestyle photography. He's covering everything that falls under that umbrella. So we've got Ian Jones in the Tamron Kitchen. He's based out of Pittsburgh. And if there is one word that describes his work, it's diversity. So if you look at his work, from food photography to people to dragging the shutter on a moving Mercedes going by, he's there to support whatever his clients need, including brainstorming to help them develop a stronger message. So I'm really excited to have Ian join us today, especially when diversity and how photographers support their clients right now is so crucial during the pandemic. It's so important for you to have that relationship with your clients and support them and continue to build your brand. So Ian, this is going to be the cue for your lips to move. Welcome to Tamron Recipes.
Hey guys, how you doing? Honored to be here for the honor.
Well, it's fun. It's fun to catch up to you. And Shamira's in Detroit. You're in Pittsburgh. I'm in South Florida. There are moments when through the pandemic, I've said, thank God for technology. Because it's pretty great that we can do this right now in three different spots of the country.
Oh, of course.
For sure. And I mean, Ian, looking at your portfolio, it is beautiful and very, very diverse. And that's why we're so looking forward to chatting with you today on this podcast. And we always like to start off with our favorite first question, and it's always such an easy one, but so important. Tell us about your background and how you got started in doing what you're doing today.
Oh man, I know you say that's the easiest question, but for me, it's like the hardest because there's like such a big story. Where I started, I always take that as like, where were you born? So I was actually born in Vegas. I lived there for a little bit, for 4 years, so I don't remember any of it. And I know it's like kind of boring not to remember you were born in Vegas, but then I moved to upstate New York. And then from there, I went to a trade school. And during my time at that trade school, I got into Photoshop and digitally editing images and graphic design. And then from there, that took me to Pittsburgh. And when I went to the Art Institute, and then from there, that's why I moved to Pittsburgh. And that's kind of where I got into photography.
When you got into photography at that point,
yeah.
What was your goal? What were you thinking about?
At the time, I was in and out of like dorm rooms, and out of college, I moved in with a buddy, and he was taking photography in college. And one day he was like, hey, I'm going to go downtown and take photos. You should come with me. You can use like my old camera. And I didn't want to. I was like super against it because at the time, if you pick up a DSLR camera, never touching one before, there's so many dials and buttons and you have no idea what anything does. And it's frustrating to me because I know what I want the camera to do. I just don't know how to do it. So I said no time after time after time. And then I taught myself how to use it. And then from there, secretly, I got in photography. And that's kind of where my passion grew. It was from that moment. So it's kind of hard because I don't like to be taught something. I like to learn on my own. So I feel like that's why there was like that kind of like distance of wanting him to go out and like teach me how to do that. But that's where I got started.
Just curious, what was your first paid gig or image you sold something that brought revenue in, even if it was only a buck at a craft fair?
No, my first paid gig is a funny story because I finally learned how to use a camera, barely. I went on Craigslist, which is, I feel like, so outdated for jobs at this point. But there was a gentleman looking for a photographer to photograph his surprise engagement. He was going to propose to his now fiance, probably wife. And I messaged him and I was like, oh, I'll totally do that for $200. And I feel like that's super expensive for my skill level at the time. But he jumped on it and said, absolutely. And I was so nervous. I feel like I was super sweaty and super nervous. And I took the gig and I was hiding in bushes and I just fired off images and gave it to him and he was happy. And that was pretty much it. And I feel like after that, I was just like stoked to be paid for it. Like once you get like money for what you did, it's kind of an awesome feeling.
Especially when it's something you love. But I want to make one comment, and then I know Shamira wants to get in on this conversation. But to your comment about, well, that was a lot of money for you know, how new I was. There are a couple of educators out there that have made the comment that if you were a brand new Starbucks owner and you were just opening up your Starbucks on the first day, would you be uncomfortable charging people because you were new? And the reality is that your $200, you were capturing a memory. And for so many photographers out there who undervalue what they're providing to a client, just it comes up all the time, and especially with new photographers. So if you've at least done your homework and you know your gear and you're ready to meet the client's expectations, then the fee is more related to the work involved and the value of the memories you're going to help capture. So,
I mean, that's understandable, but also like in the same breath, I know photographers that get paid way more than they should.
Oh, I couldn't agree on that more.
It's kind of like a seesaw of it's just, and like that question, I hate when somebody asks me, what would you charge to do XYZ? Because I'm so uncomfortable answering that question because I hate just coming up with a number. You know what I mean?
It's hard. It's tough. It definitely is a balance.
And it is a hard question to answer, especially when you're getting started. But you also have to look at, and this is where photographers fall down all the time. They'll say, well, how can I charge $20 for that when the lab charged me two? Mm-hmm. Well, the difference is that all the practice, all your gear, your insurance, you know, for wedding photographers, how many weekends are you going to give up of your life to photograph a wedding? Now, it's part of the business, and I get that, but there's a value to what you bring to the party. And so often photographers forget. I mean, insurance is one that we've talked about on other podcasts, because if you're a professional photographer and you think your gear is going to be covered under your homeowner's policy, forget it. And they wind up losing something or having something stolen, and then they're going to shock because they, oh my God, I didn't know I wasn't covered. So there's so many other expenses that go into answering that question besides just, you know, what do they want? It's like people that say, how much are your 8x10s? Well, how many do you want? Are we retouching? Do you want other things with it? Are we capturing, or do you know we have a sitting fee? I mean, there's so many things that come in under that umbrella when they ask you what would you charge me? So what's your answer? How much would you charge me for XYZ? Don't answer that. Don't waste time.
So I'm curious then, Ian, from there, so you're starting your business. How did you gain momentum from there for your business and start building relationships with not just any clients, but the right clients?
I think it was a very slow churn. Mm-hmm. It was very much just a hobby at first. And then it was kind of like a word of mouth thing. Like, oh, I have a friend that takes photography and like he does photos. And I actually started doing weddings and I hated weddings, but I did a few for like friends of a friend, and they weren't that bad. And weddings, you can make a lot of money from a wedding, but they're so stressful. And I just kind of like stood away from doing them anymore. But I don't know. I just kind of got into it, and I wasn't really sure like where to go from there.
And building those relationships so that people start knowing more of your work. What are some of the things that you found work the best in terms of getting the word out? I mean, I get, you know, because we're very much a word of mouth business.
Yeah.
And especially right now, photographers forget that how much power a consumer has. If they love your work, a consumer's got the same kind of reach that, you know, a magazine or newspaper had 10 years ago, all through social media. Are there things that are more specific that you did to help getting more of your work out there, to have more people see it, to build relationships with more potential clients?
Oh, of course. I feel like there was a point where I got really obsessed with social media and Instagram, and I knew that was one of the biggest outlets to show your work to people. So I got really obsessed with growing my Instagram account, and I think like right now I'm at like 22,000 followers. But in the beginning, pushing content out that way and talking to brands and posting images, and that's basically where I started getting my name out there and started working with brands. So if you check my Instagram feed, like you've probably seen in the past week or so, there's photos of a beer, and there's a water, there's a Komodo grill on there too. So basically, like, what I would do is I would take photos of product, put on my Instagram feed, and just try to gain attention that way. And by growing that account locally in Pittsburgh, that was how I was able to get more eyes on my work. And I've probably got more jobs via Instagram versus like anywhere else. So that's kind of like what I focused on the most, was growing that. And that helped me out tremendously.
How did the relationship with Tamron kick off?
I was in the market for a new camera. I had a Nikon D3300, I think it was. And I was in the market for a new camera. And at the time, all of my friends were switching to Sony. So they were all like, oh, you got to get the Sony A7 III. So I was like, fine. Got that camera. Loved it. It was like going from a Dodge minivan to a Lamborghini. And I mean, it's such an amazing camera. Like, even still, I feel no need to upgrade. Like, it's such a great camera. And then one of my good friends that I met via Instagram, he's from Sweden, his name's like Peter Lindgren. I was asking him, like, what is the best lens that I should invest money in that will last me a while? And I told him everything that I did, and he's like, you know, you should get the Tamron, the 2875. So I bought it. It was like $800 at the time. And at the time I thought, man, that's a lot of money. But in the grand scheme of things, like, lenses are not cheap, you know? So I bought that lens, and I used that lens for like 2.5 years. It was awesome. It got me portraits. I use it for food photography. I use it for street photography. And even at like 2.8, it was just a great lens. So going back to what I said about tagging brands, so what I do whenever I post an image on Instagram, if there's a brand that is in that photo, I would go to said brand's Instagram page. I will see what hashtags they're using, because I know they're looking at those hashtags because they're using them themselves. I would tag Tamron in all my images. I would use their hashtag so I know they're seeing my stuff. And I did that for 2 years. And after doing that for a certain amount of time, I started having people DM me asking me about Tamron lenses. So I felt like I'm doing all this work for Tamron, advocating for them. They should know this. So what I did is I started screenshotting those DMs of me helping people, swaying them towards Tamron lenses. And then I would send them to them, and I would just bug them. I'd be like, hey, sold you another lens. This person asked me about a lens, and I put them towards you. And I just like was bugging them. And then I got their attention, and they looked at my stuff, and they're like, okay. And then we just made a relationship, and that's kind of like where it started, because I feel like if you're going to approach a brand, you should show them some value first. Mm-hmm. Show them like what you're doing for them before asking for anything. And that's kind of where we built a relationship. So that's just kind of where that started.
I love that you put in the work, that it was not... So many people assume that they see successful people and think, oh, it's an overnight success. You're just an overnight success. But you literally put in years of work doing the footwork. And I think that's so cool.
You can't just knock on a door and be like, hey, I want to do this now. Like it's so hard to explain. Like I did this for, it took me 2 years to get to this spot. You know what I mean? And you can't just ask for it.
Right.
You know, over the years when I was at Hasselblad, I would get people, in fact, it was embarrassing. A photographer who was a well-known professional, and I won't share his name, sent both me a letter and Henry Froelich, who was then president of Mamiya America. The problem is that he put Henry's letter in my envelope and my letter in Henry's envelope because he wanted one of us to pick him up. And I think at the time he might have been shooting Bronica or Pentax. And the reality is, I mean, I remember calling Henry and we were both laughing about how absurd this photographer was to even think that we were all desperate to find a hired gun, because anybody can hire a hired gun. There are thousands of photographers out there that any manufacturer, even if it was a product that nobody knew, could go to and, hey, we'd like you to shoot with our product and we're going to pay you X amount. Fine. Boom, you're done. But that comment you made a minute ago about doing the work is so critical, and that when vendors are looking for support, they don't want somebody that just wants to jump on the bandwagon and mm-hmm. be part of the team. They want somebody that already believes in their products and services. So that was pretty. If I had asked you to say that, I couldn't have written it out better.
So like going off what you said, and I told that to Tamron as well, like I don't want to push a brand just because you're paying me or supplying me with product. I hate the word like Instagram influencer. I feel like it sounds so cheesy. I've always told like my followers or people who follow me or people who ask me questions, like I will tell them the truth. So I would never want to push a product if it wasn't something I actually use and believe in. So I am like wholeheartedly for Tamron lenses because I use them, and I use them before they even reached out to me. Like it's the same thing with, I recently made a relationship with OGO bags. If you saw like on my Instagram, like I have like coupon codes for them, but I use their bags and love their bags before I made a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. So now I advocate for them, but I use them and I like them. You know what I mean? Like I'm not like a Kardashian peddling makeup because you're paying me millions of dollars. Although that would be awesome. If I was in that tax bracket, I would try to peddle you anything. But right now, like I'm only going to tell you to use something if I actually use it and believe in it.
Oh, I love that the Kardashians just made their way into our conversation. That's awesome.
It's a first.
Like, listen, it aggravates me because they sometimes they get $200,000 to $500,000 a post on Instagram.
Yeah,
it's insane. It's insane.
So what's your favorite focal length to use?
Do you mean like my favorite lens now or like just focal length in general? Realistically, so I have the 28-75, the 70-180, and I have the 20mm, 17-28, and then I forget what it is, but the 200mm. But the 17-28 has not come off my body in months. Honestly, that is my favorite lens.
It's a sweet lens.
Out of all the lenses I mentioned, that is my favorite one.
Awesome. So just to shift the conversation a little bit, let's touch on the image that we shared last week. And we would love to hear about what went into making that image. The one with the girls in the pool.
Okay.
And it's so dynamic. And Skip and I were looking at that like, oh, how did he do that? And so I'd love to hear kind of how you put that image together and also what lens you used as well to create that.
All right, so the story behind that image is I got asked to do a family photo shoot from a buddy that I know, and I said, absolutely, I'll do that for you. And aside from their photo shoot, everything went fine. It was just a bunch of family photos. And the kids were – I don't have any children, but if you know what it's like to photograph children, it's very hard. They get bored. They're antsy. They start crying and fussing, and they don't want anything to do with anything that's going on. It's basically just for like the parents. And it's funny because my fiance actually had a toy behind me the entire time trying to get their attention to make good photos for them. As we were wrapping up the shoot, there was a pool in the background, an inflatable pool, and the kids the entire time were begging to jump into the pool. So in the back of my mind, I was like, I'm going to get photos of them jumping in the pool. I knew this before this even happened. So I was already set to do this because I love to play with water. And this goes back to like food photography. If I could get something in motion in photography, that's how I like to like portray like images and stuff like that. So what I did is after the shoot, I put on my 17-28 2.8, which is my favorite lens, like I mentioned before. And the parents said, once we're done with the shoot, we're going to let the kids jump in the pool. So I went over there and I basically just stuck my Sony almost into the water. And I said, let the kids jump in the pool, splash around. I'm going to fire off a bunch of shots. So I think I took like maybe 10, 15 shots and I just got that one and I loved it. So that's basically the story behind that shot. So I kind of feel bad when I get asked this question, like, oh, what was your thought process behind this? Like, what were you going for? I'm just like, I just took my camera and just stuck it in the water. You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of like where my brain goes. Like, that's just what I did.
Well, there aren't a lot of photographers that would take their camera and just stick it next to the water.
I know there's water sealing to a certain extent, but to be completely honest, right now, I actually thought about this earlier. My camera is so dirty. I actually had a pickle seed. I flicked off the lens earlier today when I had to take a photo or something. I've put that thing through so much stuff. It's incredible.
Well, when you look at the expression on the girls' faces in the photo, they look like they're having a blast. I mean, there's nothing posed or stiff about it. That I can't speak for them, but I wonder if that was their favorite part of the whole thing, because it looks like it.
It was funny because the mom went nuts because I actually told her, because if you see, she's splashing. Her arm is going through the mm-hmm. through the motion of splashing. I told her, I said, splash me. And her mom's like, no, because like she didn't want to buy me a new camera. But I said, don't worry about it. It's okay. And she splashed me, and it just like turned out, I couldn't have asked for a better photo.
Yeah.
Honestly, it's like perfect. And I'm actually upset a little bit that it didn't do more than it did on Instagram.
Wow.
Because you're like, you're always hoping for that, like, this is the photo that's going to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can't control it on social media, though. Sometimes it's a strange beast, social media. So.
Oh, trust me. Yeah, trust me, I know.
Well, it's about to get a whole lot more play again. So we'll see if that helps you on more views. But, you know, working with kids, I mean, there are photographers that mom brings a kid into the studio and they're ready to slash their wrists. And I remember going into Jack Resnicki is a good buddy and past president of PPA years ago. And I walked into his studio, and at the time, Toys R Us was his account, and he was auditioning for the Toys R Us insert, which used to be, especially at holiday time, I don't know, 10 pages, dozen pages insert in just about every newspaper in the country. And it was moms and kids. And this was like the day for the, I'm guessing, the 6 to 8 year old category. And it was just total chaos. And you walk into that, and I mean, Jack was fine. Jack was just mellow and, yeah, I said, you all right? And he said, yeah, why? Because it's chaos. And in the next few minutes, I'm going to throw a kid out the window. In terms of that, or is there a toughest project that you've had to work on to date that just, it's the one that kept you up at night?
Man, I feel like that's, I mean, maybe it's this question that will keep me up at night. I really feel like the hardest thing that I've done are probably weddings, and not that they're hard because like, I don't feel like I didn't perform well at a wedding. I just feel like weddings are stressful. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into it. There's a lot of batteries you got to charge, lenses, preparations. You're up for like 15 hours a day. I'm just trying to think, like, I haven't had any job that was like super hard to do or fulfill to answer your question, I just feel like maybe all I could say is maybe weddings. That was the hardest thing that I had to do that kept me up at night. But not that it was a hard job to fulfill. It was just the stress of it, I feel like, kept me up.
No, so I'm not surprised that weddings would come up there, although I didn't realize. I mean, I know I saw a couple wedding images in your portfolio online. And I thought, well, maybe those are just part of some of the lifestyle stuff. I didn't realize that you'd actually done weddings.
Yeah, I've done a few weddings, and I only do weddings if it's somebody who reaches out and asks me to do a wedding. And if it's like somebody of a friend word of mouth type of wedding, I definitely don't advertise for weddings, but I will do them if the price is right, if that makes sense.
That totally does. Well, I have a friend from my Hasselblad days who is a forensic photographer. He's essentially CSI New York.
That's probably an awesome job, but also kind of like a creepy job.
Well, here's the part that I will never forget, because he was also an outstanding wedding and event photographer on the weekends. And I remember him saying to me that he photographs every now and then, there's a couple that he photographs and he knows he's going to see one of them at a homicide a decade later. If they last that long, because you guys are right there, your storytellers.
It's crazy because at one event, he's taking photos of couples that are moving, and then the other event, he's taking photos of couples that aren't.
That's a good way. That's another way to put it.
So are there any things you wish you would have done differently with your business?
Well, I feel like this question would go back to
keeping you up at night again.
Yeah, I wish I would have started earlier. Hmm. If that makes any sense. I wish I would have gotten to photography and marketing and all these things earlier, because, and this goes back to like Instagram, I wish I would have took Instagram more serious back when it first started, like back when I first got into it, because now it's so saturated that it's like just so hard to grow. So I wish I would have got into the marketing, the Instagram, the self-promotion, the photography earlier. I feel like that just is my only really regret with the whole field. And I wouldn't even feel like it's a regret. It's not like it's like keep me up at night, but that's probably like what I would change.
By the way, that comment probably gets repeated by thousands of people, including people like me.
Yeah, me too.
Who spent a lifetime in this industry. And I remember having a conversation with a mutual friend of mine in Chimera, Scott Bourne. And Scott had the, I believe, 104th website in the world. And at a time when all the rest of us were sitting there going, come on, it's a gimmick. It's never going to catch on.
Yeah.
Scott went out and started. And today, I mean, that later became photofocus.com, and a company that both Shamir and I value a lot and work very closely with. It's one of those things where you're sitting there saying, God, I wish I had known, I don't know, to invest in medical masks 6 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, yeah.
It's the same thing. So I think the cool thing is that you recognized it, and if you think about it, used it to your advantage, especially when you were talking about how you build the relationship with Tamron and work to get that endorsement so that people knew that man, you really believed in the products you were using, and Tamron lenses were right there helping you build that image awareness of everything you were doing.
Yeah. The whole thing with Tamron, I feel like I was the right place, right time with them, because something they had said to me in the beginning was I was different from what they have, and they were looking for different, if that makes sense. Because if you look at any other Tamron ambassador, it's landscapes, wild photography, street photography. It's kind of like very basic kind of things. Like there's very segmented photographers, but I have a diverse schedule of photos. So that's kind of like, I was like right place, right time. So that kind of like helped.
Well, you've also, there are a lot of people out there that'll say that if you don't specialize, you're going to become a master of mediocrity, and you can't be everything to everybody. But I think you've shown you, and it's true, you can't be everything to everybody, but you can help everybody with everything. So in terms of your client base and building that skill set and the fact that you like to learn it yourself and practice, practice, practice. And I can guess how many images you've never shown anybody because they were all part of the learning curve. That's all part of it.
So Ian, we're going to close out with our favorite final question. What advice do you have for new photographers just starting out today?
I think going back to what we talked about earlier, is just, I feel like just take the photos. And I say this a lot to people who, I get a lot of DMs asking like, what would you suggest I do? Or what should I do to do this? Or my best advice would just be learn your camera. Watch YouTube videos on your camera, because there's YouTube videos on freaking everything. Mm-hmm. Use YouTube for free learning. Practice. Do something that you don't think you're good at. Just try it and just do. But like, I don't want to sound like Nike, but like, just do it. You know, like just figure your stuff out. Just like with anything, you can't just put on shoes without learning how to tie them. You got to just like get your feet in the water and just kind of learn how to do stuff. So to answer your question, just do it and learn it and practice and do it over and over and over again until you're happy with something you're doing. And then when you're at that point, do better and just continue doing that.
I love it. Kick procrastination to the curb.
I'm going to tag a line onto that, which is a great quote I used a while back of growth only occurs outside your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
It's very true, yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. And I want to make sure and remember to ask Ian, where can folks check out your work online?
You can look at my Instagram page, which is kind of like where I put my most updated work, or my website, which is isjdesigns.com. Which is where I have my contact information and everything on there. So either or, both greatly, greatly appreciated.
Excellent. And Skip, I want to make sure and ask, what about you?
It's always the same answer. I'm Skip Cohen on Facebook and Skip Cohen on Twitter. And everything I write is on skipcohenuniversity.com. And Shamir and I always want more feedback and suggestions, especially with Tamron recipes that we can pass on to the Tamron team. And my email is skip@mei500.com. And Shamira, as always, where do they go to find you?
Folks can send me an email at shamira@shamirastudios.com. That's my first name, Chamira, @shamirastudios.com. And we always, always love hearing from our listeners, getting feedback and ideas, because it shapes how we move forward with the show. And with that said, Ian, I really want to thank you again. This has been awesome. Thank you for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No problem.
You've shared a lot of good insight there too. Good stuff.
And we want to thank our listeners for joining us today on this episode of Tamron Recipes, brought to you by Tamron USA and Skip Cohen University.